Welcome to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, a high-energy, high-fun podcast hosted by Quint Studer. In each high-impact segment, Quint chats with the individuals on how they're navigating today's environment. Quint and his guests showcase best practices and how they work in different contexts. You'll often walk away with tactical tools and tips that you can apply to your own role, business, community, and life. I'm Nicole Webb-Bodie, the Chief Impact Officer at Studer Family of Companies. Quint is a well-known healthcare operator, author, coach, and mentor to many. He has dedicated the last 3 decades to creating tools and techniques that make healthcare a better place for physicians to practice medicine, patients to receive care, and employees to work. He has written numerous books, articles, and his work is always based on evidence, research, and tools and techniques. For more information and to listen to previous podcasts, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com/podcasts. Before we get started with today's podcast, I want to share with you about our upcoming conference taking place June 21st and 22nd called Replenishing Yourself, Your Team, and Your Organization. We are aware of the financial challenges and have priced this conference very low with in-person tickets in Chicago at $300 per person and virtually at $250 per person. You can learn more and take a look at our great faculty joining the conference on our Healthcare Plus Solutions Group website, which is Healthcare Plus, spell it all out, SG.com. You can find additional details in the podcast notes. Now let me introduce you to who's joining the podcast, which is Sonia Rhodes and Dr. Renee Thompson, who share strategies for how to build a strong culture that creates a great experience for patients, employees, and coworkers. They say culture and employee experience will not only allow us to attract and keep the best and brightest, it will allow us to provide the best clinical outcomes as well as achieve our financial operational goals. There has been an uptick of bad behavior in the workplace. While bullying, lack of civility and respect, as well as conflict have always been there, a global pandemic has just intensified it. During the podcast, you'll learn how to build a culture by design, not by default, why getting intentional about the kind of workplace you want is key, why a high performer who behaves badly is really a low performer, and so much more. Sonia Rhodes is the founder and CEO of the Experience Lab, an incubator of ideas and an accelerator of action, bringing experience design and culture transformation principles to the healthcare industry. The Experience Lab partners with visionary healthcare systems and executives to imagine, design, and bring to life a new kind of healthcare experience for team members, providers, patients, and guests, and is home to the Inside Out National Experience Transformation Collaborative. Renee Thompson is an international speaker and consultant, as well as the CEO and founder of Healthy Workforce Institute. She tackles the professional challenges facing healthcare leaders today. With 31 years of experience as a clinical nurse, nurse educator, and nurse executive, Dr. Thompson is an internationally recognized expert on creating a healthy workforce by eradicating workplace bullying and incivility. Now here's your host, Quint Studer, and Dr. Renee Thompson and Sonia Rhodes.
Well, thank you, Nicole Webb-Bodie. I'm so grateful to you. You've been doing this with me for years. You help coordinate the gratitude symposium. You're what you consider a considerate done person, I guess, is what I would say. When you want something done, you ask Nicole Webb-Bodie to do it. I'm really excited. We've got Renee Thompson and Sonia Rhodes with us today. And I know both of them quite well for periods of time and have just great respect for both of you. And I'm so grateful that you've agreed to be on this podcast. And what a great time, because you both sort of, in a way, both work on creating great cultures. And you always have. This is not like where you just heard it's a hot topic, you're going to jump into it. You've been doing this from day one. So Renee, when I think of you, and I've had you come speak even in Pensacola, some rough topics in healthcare. You know, it's sometimes things aren't as civil as you'd like them to be. Mm-hmm. I think for the first time ever, I've had CEOs get up and start their talk with telling the employees that we're not going to let anyone pick on you. We're not going to let patients yell at you or hit you and so on. But we've also had a period of time, Renee, where we sometimes have employees that are going through lots of things. Mm-hmm. And things come out that isn't the best behavior. But sometimes people don't know how to confront it, particularly with the fact that you're short-staffed. It's just a tough place to be today. So yep. Tell me about the importance of being kind in the workplace. That's sort of your sticker and your button is be kind.
Yes. Thank you so much, Quentin. And as you said, You know, we've just seen this uptick in bad behavior in healthcare, especially over the last few years. However, it's always been there. We've always really had to deal with disruptive behaviors, whether it's bullying, incivility, interprofessional conflict. That's nothing new. And then you add a global pandemic, and you have people who are leaving because they're taking jobs where they can make more money, or they're leaving because they're so burned out, they just can't do it anymore. For years, one of the challenges is that leaders haven't always done a good job addressing the disruptive behaviors of their employees, especially the ones who are so clinically competent. Well, now, to your point, you add a staffing shortage, and we're even more likely to ignore someone's bad behavior, because the sort of mantra out there right now is, well, a bad nurse is better than no nurse. And I totally understand that. But the issue is, if you're not addressing disruptive behavior, maybe it's because you're so uncomfortable to do that, or it also could be you don't know how, then you're actually going to lose your good employees, the employees who are left, who do want to show up every day as their very best and who treat each other with respect and professionalism. And for years, I've been doing this work to address bullying and incivility. But as you said, it's really so that we can cultivate cultures of kindness, one human being to another human being, independent of their age, their gender, their ethnicity, the role that they play. It's just showing up as a healthcare team with this utmost respect and kindness for each other. And that affects the patients who we're serving. And so, yes, be kind is my mantra, because when you're not, it really affects everyone.
So I've been to your workshop. I've been mm-hmm. to your, recently we had your group in, your team,
yep.
into Pensacola to do some training. We do a lot of community work with small businesses. And man, were the people hungry for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like people that hadn't had water, getting water for the first time, because it was topics they maybe are afraid to talk about. They don't want to, especially our middle managers don't want to share maybe with another middle manager. They don't know how to do this. They don't want to know how to confront it. Sometimes they're even bullied by the person that they should be supervising. I mean, so on and vice versa. So talk a little bit about, help people, if I'm listening here and I'm, how do I recognize it? And then how do I address it?
Right. And exactly what you said, people are not addressing it. And it's not just maybe a leader's employee. It could be that it's your boss who's, you know, treating you in a way that's incredibly disrespectful. So there are a couple of things. First of all, it's, you know, one of the reasons that we see disruptive behavior so much in healthcare is because we've normalized it. We just say, well, that's just the way it is in healthcare, especially when somebody, again, is so clinically competent. So I think the first thing that we have to do is to raise awareness of disruptive behaviors and their impact to employees and patient outcomes, because we have numerous studies. I mean, numerous. You could do a whole podcast just on the studies that we have, taking a look at, you know, what happens to employees and patients when bad behavior is ignored. And then really, it's about equipping, especially those frontline managers, with the skills and tools that they need to set behavioral expectations and hold people accountable and, confront behaviors when they see them. And we use very simple, practical strategies. I'm very well known for telling, you know, a leader, say these words to this person when they do this. So we do simple confronting strategies, like name the behavior. You're yelling in front of patients' rooms. You're criticizing. I just saw you roll your eyes at me. You're treating this person in a very disrespectful manner. So just name the behavior. We also really focus on helping the entire healthcare team communicate using the assertive communication style that's honest and respectful. I need to be honest with you. Sometimes you come across as condescending, intimidating, abrasive. You give them an example, and then you say, can we talk about this? Because it's affecting the relationships and the way we communicate as a team. And then one of my superpowers, and I actually need to get some type of badge or some type of cape, okay, that has my superpower, which is scripting. It's because I'm sure a lot of the listeners are like me. When someone says something really rude to you or embarrasses you, you don't know what to say in the moment, but oh, the next day in the shower, oh, you can think of all sorts of things to say, but a lot of times by then it's too late. So we give our leaders and the team a lot of scripts to use when they're facing disruptive behaviors. And I think those two things, raising awareness and then confronting disruptive behaviors, will really help a team move towards professionalism, respect, and away from bullying and incivility.
You know, when I do presentations periodically, some people come up to me and say, was that me you were talking about? I'm waiting for Nicole to come in and use everything you just said as she talks to me. But a couple of the points I'd like to talk over with Renee is triggers, where somebody might subconsciously have a trigger that causes them to react a certain way. Do you want to go into a little bit of detail on that?
Sure. Especially when this pandemic hit, we saw a lot of leaders reaching out to us to say, okay, now even our good employees are acting out. And when we think about why we see more disruptive behaviors in healthcare than any other industry, well, we're working in the most stressful industry known to man. So if you work in healthcare, you work in a stressful industry, and the unpredictability of patient care, you never know what you're going to get when you walk in the door. And when people are stressed out and burned out, they lash out. And who do they lash out to? They lash out to the people that they are working next to, you know, 12-hour, 16-hour shifts. And some of the biggest triggers in the work environment right now are really about stress and people feeling helpless. Things are out of their control. And so they do, without thinking, they lash out at other people. And there was a script that I gave a lot of the leaders, especially throughout this pandemic, that I think really applies in any situation where you're having people who are acting out. And that is, look, I get it. You can be angry, scared, frustrated, burned out, stressed out, but you can't be cruel. Not today. Like, you can't, there's no justification for cruelty. And you know, if I would ask everybody who's listening right now to raise their hand if they never got testy with someone at work, nobody would raise their hand, me included. I mean, we can all misbehave. We all have those triggers. However, it's when that happens is you recognize that you behaved in a way that was incredibly unprofessional and you apologize. Like, hey, Quint, I'm really sorry that I, you know, acted out. I'm really sorry that I, you know, got testy with you this morning, or that I criticized you in front of everyone. Are we okay? And so I think, you know, everybody's got their triggers, but that then what do you do about it when they act out? You confront them about it.
One thing I always heard, which has helped me over the years, is halt.
Don't yes.
Get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And is it one of the last thing before I go to I hear it quite often, is when people try to dissect people, where they say they're a real good clinician, but recently I heard somebody keep for low performing conversations starting out saying, well, you're meeting with this high performer, but well, how are you having a low performer conversation if they're a high performer? Do you notice in healthcare people like to dissect people? What do you do when you hear somebody say, well, they're a real good clinician, but.
I don't want to say we laugh about this all the time because it's not funny. However, we justify somebody's bad behavior just because of how good they are, how much revenue they bring into the organization, or sometimes how long they've been there. And so what we try to do as part of that heightening awareness is to remind people that the way we treat each other is just as important as the good care that we provide. And if you have to say, but, you know, they're a great nurse, but they're a great physician, but then they're not great. And this is where the C-suite, the executives, need to take a stand about behavior being just as important as the performance. And when you have that executive team who's willing to call someone on their behavior who's a quote unquote high performer bringing in revenue to the organization, if they're willing to hold that person accountable too, then it's so much easier to hold everyone accountable. But they have to be the role model for this. So yes, if you can't be great if you're good, a good performer, but you treat people in a way that makes people afraid to talk to you.
Yeah, I always try to say that nice way. Well, then they're not a high performer.
Right.
They're not a high performer. Well, thank you, Renee.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. Sonia, you and I go so far back. And so it's sort of wonderful, your topic, because we were there the early days of Sharp Experience. And of course, when, you know, so I travel the country, when I talk about Sharp Experience, it's very well known, you know, the what they've done and what happened and the market they gained. And it's just one of those success stories in healthcare that continues today. And you were really, if there had to be a general contractor of constructing that culture, you'd wear the hard hat that would say general contractor, foreman in charge. So tell us about how do you construct and cultivate a better culture? And tell us a little bit about, you know, you've been doing this now for many, many years. Love to hear it. I know our listeners would love to learn more from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And it has been a long time. And it is interesting for me sometimes when I think about the work of today at this most critical time for our industry to be cultivating the kind of culture that propels us into the future, where people are every day falling back in love with what it means to be in this caring profession. It really does. Not that much has changed in terms of the how we do what we do, right? Understanding that our culture is something that happens by design, not by default. And I think so many organizations see their culture as sort of the way things happen around here, right? That it's sort of just how things go, the water we swim in, when in fact, if we were to say that about our experience, that wouldn't be very good, right? The experience just happens. No, our experience is designed with intention. Our culture is designed with intention. So the most important piece of being able to cultivate, curate, and bring to life our culture is clarity of intention. Who do we want to be? What is it that we want for our people, for our patients? And then how do we use that intention as a design tool and a decision filter? And that's what makes it really easy. I loved listening to Renee, right? If folks are real clear about what we're aiming to be, what fits and what doesn't fit, then this behavior is easier to see, right? And stand out and be able to talk about what fits and what doesn't fit. So when we think about designing culture and designing experience, one, it's designed to a clear intention, and two, it's co-created. Culture is not necessarily something that a few people say this is what it's going to be and you know, kind of hope for the best or tell people what to do. We've found over now longer than 20 years that the cultures that last, the cultures that distinguish organizations, the cultures that set us up to be able to create the kinds of experiences that everyone desires and deserves, are cultures where people feel like they were an architect of that. So, Quint, you were really gracious to say that I had a hard hat on my head when it came to cultivating the culture of Sharp Healthcare. But what made it magic, what made it last, and what made the difference is that everybody felt like they contributed. So I think that's kind of an interesting time right now when we look at what's happening today and what we're creating for the future. Sometimes in difficult times, senior leaders kind of get into the tell mode. Oh, well, this is what we have to do. And we're going to have to tell everybody what they need to do. And we really need to be back in that invite mode, to invite people in to help create the culture that everyone's looking for.
I love what you said. You know, I've learned more and more over the years that I think the Heath brothers say 80% of failure is lack of clarity. So, you know, what does right really look like? But Todd, walk people through, if they're not familiar with your work at the Experience Lab. I'm a CEO or I'm an executive, because I think what I've seen many, many times is the CEO in a small group go and they create something. I mean, I went to a hospital one time, and in a week they hit their mission, vision, values, because what person and head of strategic planning said, here should be our mission, vision, values. So walk through today in this environment when people say they're too busy. I you know, they're too busy. I'm a CEO and I hear this podcast and I call you up and say, Renee, tell me if I hired you and you were working with us. It sounds good, but can you walk through a few how-to steps to help that you work with an organization to get them there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do partner with visionary healthcare systems that are really eager to distinguish themselves by the culture they create and the experiences that come to life in their places and spaces. And the process is really just four steps. One, how do we lead for the kind of experience and culture we want? And that leading piece talks about what is the clarity of our intention? We really help organizations either use something that exists. Sometimes it is a mission or a vision that has been useful and helpful. And other times it's needing to create a clear words intention, organizations that know what that is, and then connect all the dots to that so that you can orchestrate the whole of your experience. I think sometimes those words that you just described, people who went into a room, put them all together, put them on a wall, they framed them really nice, but there isn't a way to activate that, to live that. And so this is about clarity of that intention. What is the experience or culture we want to create? How do we connect those dots? And then how do we think about the orchestration of everything as the embodiment of that intention? Then we again, four steps, we look with new eyes. We look to see what is and what could be. So we notice the details, large and small. We shift our perspective very intentionally. I just spent a week last week with an incredibly engaged senior team doing this body of work, like really literally looking at, well, wait, if we say this is who we are, but this is what we're doing, those are not congruent, right? So how do we do better alignment with that? We then have a body of work called Living, where they then understand, what do I need to do to, in every moment, bring that culture and experience to life? How do I stage? And I don't mean fake. I mean stage. Do I bring my people, my processes, my physical places together so that they are all the embodiment of what we're aiming for? And then finally, we spend time with leaders in a body of work called Loving. And listening to Renee makes me think about how important this word love is in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And you know, pre-pandemic, sometimes we'd get that big eyebrow quint of like, what's love got to do with it? And we would say everything. This is an opportunity for people to bring their whole heart to this work and to do so with joy and love, with the purpose of helping people every day fall back in love with the work that they do, feel good about coming into their workplace, and feel good about the experience they create with their colleagues and for their community. So four steps: leading, looking, living, and loving, to get clear on what they want to bring to life, and then find easy ways to make that happen in every moment.
No, I'm going to say I love that. Anyway, we both like music. When she said, what's love got to do with it, I wanted to right away break into a song here. It's great to say that. About 3 years ago, I was being interviewed by someone and they asked me, they were a John Gordon disciple, and he always says, what's the word? What's the word this year? So she wanted to know, what's the word? And on the way out, she said, I think it'd be good if you said engagement. So we walked out. She said, what's the word? And I just lost a friend. And I said, it's love. That's really the word. And so thank you for bringing that up. What do you do today when people say, I'd love to do this, but gosh, everybody's already so busy. How can I ask them to do one more thing? Because this could look like one more thing. So how do you get somebody through that mental barrier?
You know, having had that conversation a number of times recently, I think the flip for folks to think about is culture or experience, however you want to describe that, not as another thing to do. It's the easiest thing, right? I mean, I think about this, right? We're going to do all these things. And then when times get good and money is fine and we have what we need, then we'll also work on this, right? That always seems to be the other piece. And the reality is, experience and our culture can't be another thing to do. It has to be a way to do everything. So that is really, the organizations that work with us are looking for wholesale transformation of their organization, understanding this isn't about a score, it's not about a metric, it's about a way, and it's about a choice we make. in how we do what we do. So when we think about our culture and our experience, you want that to be that organizing principle that everything can fit into. And having just spent, you know, a week with a big team last week on this exact same model, it was really fun to see the transformation take place from folks going, how are we going to have time? And it's another thing to do. And we already have this long list, to walking away saying, this is the investment we have to make in our future. And it's investment in our time and our passion and our belief in what's possible, and then also investing in their folks to be able to inform what that future looks like. I think so. Really, I mean, you know, and Quint, I would say, you know, for those of us that have been doing this work for over 20 years, I often engage with my wonderful colleagues from Sharp, some of whom have recently retired, and we talk about this. Even the CFO would say, single greatest investment ever made was their culture, because culture and experience is what actually created the financial, the business, the operational success needed.
I think you get to a point where you say, how can we not?
How can we not?
That's where you get, you know, that's where you're ending up. After you, they go through it, somebody says, how can we not do this? How right. can we not do this? What about self-regulating culture? What do you mean by that? Because that's one of the terms you use.
Yeah, and one that a number of our faculty in the Experience Lab use as well. And I think what we're aiming for is to create organizations where every single colleague understands what we're trying to bring to life, what their part is, and that it is no longer about how do we kind of have leaders tell others what to do, but instead have every one of us regulate our culture based on the clarity of what we're aiming for. If this is the experience we said we want to bring to life, then I notice that somebody, you know, to what Renee was saying, that somebody may not be their best today. They may be having that moment that has some tension, but rather than waiting for someone's boss to come in and notice that and do something about it, I, as a colleague, can say, hey, Quint, I've just noticed you're maybe not having the best day. How can I be of support to you? Or I just want to remind you that you're on stage. I just want to let you know that we made a commitment to X, and how can I help you? And I had this opportunity last week with a group of physicians we were with, and they'd made this personal commitment about how they were going to be more present. And then right away, a physician ended up on his telephone in front of the whole group. And I, you know, kind of came over, just put my hand on his shoulder and said, I just want to remind you that you made a commitment. May I help you find a private space for that phone call? And he was like, oh my gosh, look how easy it is to fall back into my old ways. So, but I was on his side. He knew I was a guide for him and not there to gotcha, right? This isn't gotcha leadership. This is how to be an agent on the behalf of everyone we work with and to guide them to their very best selves. And so self-regulating culture is when I, as a senior leader, or I, as a leader of a team, do not have to be the ones either finding everybody doing things great or catching somebody not quite living up to our values, but instead having everyone else do that for each other because we've made that commitment.
You know, you have the right culture when you hear a coworker say to another coworker, here's how we do that here. Here's how we do that here. That's when you got the magic, because that's really what we're talking about, is that, but, and they connect the dots to why, because it's the right thing to do, because this is what we do, and so on. So as we wrap up here, both of you have stayed in love. I mean, I've known you guys for a long, long time, and you know, you've stayed in love in healthcare. And for some people, they're not as fortunate. They fall out of love. In healthcare, I talk about, you know, we enter with a full emotional bank account and then we get these withdrawals. And lately I've been saying, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but these physicians are so excited at medical school now because they're finding their match for residency. And they're all excited. They're posting it on social media. The next time they'll post is their first shift. So my first shift. I've never seen anyone post. I'm waiting for someone to post my second shift, my 35th shift, my 50th shift. And it's a challenge. It's certainly been with the great resignation. So tell if you want to start, Renee, how do you fall in love in healthcare, and how do you stay in love with it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think many of us who have worked in healthcare for a long time are at that point where we're questioning, you know, why did I get into this profession? And, you know, yeah, be a nurse, they say, it'll be fun, they say. I think you have to first go back to why you chose to work in healthcare to begin with. And I've asked this question to thousands, especially nurses, in this one keynote that I do. And I asked them, why did you choose to become a nurse in the first place? And they usually tell me stories about they were young, they were sick as a child, they were cared for by an amazing nurse and wanted to be just like that nurse, or watched a family member be cared for by a nurse. There's some other really interesting, and sometimes I refer to them as wonky, reasons why somebody chose healthcare. And when I even think of myself, why I chose to become a nurse and work in healthcare is because I love science. I love the human body, but I also wanted an opportunity to make a difference in someone's life. And we allow other things, and it's not our fault to really get in the way of that. So the first thing that we need to do is just take a step back and remember our why. Why do we choose to work in healthcare? And know that we do have an opportunity every single day we come into work to make a difference in the life of someone else. And I think it's that reminder for each one of us, and each one of us is a little different, but that's what can keep you moving forward, even on those days when you think, oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this one more day. If you have a strong purpose, it really does help.
You know, we ask everyone we work with, and every year it's thousands and thousands of caregivers, if they had a magic wand, what's the one change they would make in healthcare? And everyone has their magic wand answer. What would make the experience better for a team member? What would make the experience better for a patient or a loved one? They have the answers. And so I think what helps people fall back in love day after day after day is knowing that their ideas matter and that there's a place for them to be put into action. So the organizations where folks get a chance to be part of creating the next day and the next month and the next year, instead of saying, I don't know why it's always been like this, or the frustration of medical education or whatever it might be, but instead saying we can be the ones that make it exactly what we want it to be, that helps people fall back in love every single day. They get to bring their very best to what it is that we're all called to do right now.
I want to thank both of you, Renee. You know, you and I have known of each other for years, mm-hmm. and know each other. And a couple of years ago, we connected and gotten to know each other personally and utilized your services for my own companies. And just so grateful for what you've been doing these many, many years in healthcare. You know, you're sort of one that's was talking about it before anyone was talking about it. You had courage enough to bring up topics that had sat under the tables. Like we said, a lot of this is not new. It's not new. So you've been a real trailblazer in this whole idea of kind workplaces and confronting inappropriate behavior over the years, no matter what. So I want to thank you. And I even have a sticker and a button of be kind. So thank you.
That's awesome. Spread the word, you know, just be kind to each other. And it's truly been an honor. And, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for you, Quint, and the good work that you've done, and how, you know, at this season of your life, you are such an advocate for love and kindness and gratitude. And we need more of that in this world. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And Sonia, I was just thinking, sitting here, I remember you, Diane, and Mike Murphy in Seattle, Washington, sitting at a table where I think Mike was a hostage on that trip to see Sharp Healthcare. And then just the early days of that with the board of directors. And one of my favorite stories is Mike hadn't used outside measurement for some things. And his first report came back and it wasn't that good. And you actually had me on the phone at the time. So when he read it, we could like decompress him and tell him, yeah, but look how smart you are, because you saw around corners, you're already doing it. And one of the joys of my career was being able to, those. And again, I did very, 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 very little, but to be there at the beginning and watch the Sharp experience and what you led. And since then, our relationship that we've kept going. So again, Sonia, thank you so much.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. And honestly, I think about the trajectory of this work and how so much of that started with your heart right in the center of it. I will forever be grateful for every moment that we've spent together, and the love and the hilarity that ensued sometimes with some of those moments, and look at what's come of it. It's just a delight to spend a little more time with you today. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you both. And I appreciate it. And again, thank you for being part of so many great organizations that I can guarantee you, if you could bring in Renee and Sonia, you will be a better organization when they leave than when they came. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, hosted by Quint Studer. Please subscribe, rate us, and write a review. For more information, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com.